RNZ National. Wallace Chapman here. Lovely to have your company. We have Mei Chen and Simon Pound on board this Thursday afternoon. Red lights in Hawke's Bay. Red lights are optional, says someone. Wallace and the panel, red light running in Christchurch. It is the Wild West in Christchurch. Another one here, Koi Marama Road intersection next to Koi Primary School is shocking. Racing through red lights is disturbing. And Wallace, if people really want to change, they will. Several years ago, I made a decision to not have a takeaway coffee if I did not have my cup. It only took a few times and I changed my habits or went without. So that on the panel later. 4:08, the Breast Cancer Foundation has made a plea to the government to invest $15 million in targeted funding to clear the mammogram backlog of 50,000 women within a year. More than 100 people attended a pink ribbon breakfast in Parliament's Grand Hall this morning, including MPs, women affected by breast cancer, medical professionals and health officials. The Breast Cancer Foundation has urged guests to join the Give Us Our Mammograms campaign, warning the future of breast screening is on a knife edge. With us is someone both professional and lived experience in this area. With us is Auckland GP, Dr. Heidi McRae. Dr. McRae, kia ora.
Kia ora.
And this issue is personal to you, Heidi, isn't it? You not long ago received your own diagnosis.
Absolutely. I was fit and healthy person last year until I had a mammogram and discovered I had breast cancer. And I've spent the last 6 or 7 months fighting it, but now I'm a breast cancer survivor.
50,000, the backlog. That sounds like an extraordinary number to me and many listening. Why has it got so low? Is this in part because of the lockdown?
I suspect so. There were, especially in Auckland, there were lots of COVID cancellations. That's what's happened to my mammogram. And women are potentially not looking after themselves as well as they would have done. I think they're waiting for essential well-being trips to the doctor or medical services rather than the more proactive screening ones.
And in terms of the proactive nature of this issue, how much of a difference, remind us, how much of a difference does early detection make? And what about in your case?
Early detection is so important, and the Breast Cancer Foundation's registry has got amazing evidence to show that those women who get picked up, their breast cancer gets picked up by a mammogram, do so much better in terms of survival than those women who wait till they have symptoms. So that's on the whole. In my case, I had regular mammograms, but because I had a very aggressive breast cancer, it came between screenings. It was very lucky that I got a timely mammogram because I managed to persuade a private breast screening place to give me a mammogram despite their initial COVID cancellation. And my oncologist reckons that if I'd have waited a couple of months, it would have been too late. It would have spread beyond the breast and gone to lymph nodes and travelled, and in which case it would become uncurable.
We have our panel here. Mm-hmm. They'll want to have a question or a comment with you, Heidi. But what are you asking the government for? What are you calling on the government to do?
Well, firstly, we need to get as many women as possible up to date with their mammograms. And I think we're at the lowest levels we've been in years. So we need to clear the backlog, and then we need to find ways to increase participation in the breast cancer screening campaign. And the Breast Cancer Foundation would very much like to increase the window of screening that's offered in New Zealand. At the moment, it doesn't go into the 70s, and that's when breast cancer becomes more common. So that would be fantastic if there was additional funding. I would like it to go to the younger women as well, because it's the nasty, aggressive breast cancers that tend to metastasize and kill women that tend to be picked up, that tend to occur in women in their 30s and 40s.
Okay, yeah. May.
Well, Dr. McRae, thank you very much for doing what you're doing. Mammograms are horrible. They're uncomfortable, and I don't like getting mine, and I promise to do better. I will actually deal to the fact that I need to get on and do it. But the difficulty here is, of course, that many health issues have taken a backseat because of COVID, and I'm just a bit worried about the timing. I absolutely understand the budget is next week, but of course the difficulty is that if you know how Wellington works, budget bids generally go up at the end of November of the year prior, so we're talking about 2021, and then of course after Christmas, around about February, that's when the meetings all start, and pretty much all the decisions are done and dusted by March. So I am fingers crossed for you that the government will hear what you've said. It's just that I'm a little worried that budget's next week, and I understand the timeliness of it. I love the fact that we live in a democracy, Dr. McRae, where you can do hashtag give us our mammograms campaign and make a difference. So I hope that you win.
You want to respond to that?
Well, I would like to say that the Breast Cancer Foundation has been giving this message since way before Christmas. So hopefully the government has listened with enough time to influence this budget. So fingers crossed. And also, not everybody finds mammograms terribly uncomfortable. I don't want people to be put off. Some women don't like them very much, but it's usually just a little bit of embarrassment rather than being uncomfortable or painful. We want to encourage women to get there, not put them off.
I know, Dr. McRae, but I would very much like you to devise a machine that doesn't hurt, because generally when it is painful. Yeah.
Not for everyone.
Right.
All right, Simon?
Yeah, great. Thank you for the work on this, Dr. McRae. It was really interesting to see the fact that the increase in screenings has been one of the major things that's been the fact that the 5-year survival rate of breast cancer, the risk of death has halved, and the increase in screenings was seen as a big reason for that. So any steps that go backwards from that seem to be something that need to be avoided at all costs.
Absolutely. So screening has been fantastic. And once we've made sure that we're doing our absolute best with screening, we then need to be addressing some of the treatment difficulties and moving forward with those as well. And hopefully then there'll be zero deaths from breast cancer.
Well, it's very nice to have you on the program, Dr. McRae, and all the very best for the upcoming budget. And meanwhile, just again, a reinforcement, a reminder and an acknowledgement for people out there, for women out there, to go and get your mammogram, huh?
Yes, sir.
Yep, there you go. That's Dr. McRae there, Auckland GP. All right, it's 15 past four. The panel, RNZ National. And look, staying with health, the budget 2022 is to be all about health. Finance Minister Grant Robinson said in a meeting this morning, quoting, "The quality of healthcare and the availability of specialists differs from region to region. The system is fragmented. It's inefficient, with management structures too often getting in the way of the best approach to care." That's what he said today. On July the 1st, District 20 DHBs and a workforce of more than 80,000 will become an entity, one entity, Health NZ, alongside the inaugural Māori Health Authority. There will be an increased focus on a primary or GP level community care. With us is Professor Robin Gall. He's the director of the Centre for Health Systems that spans the Otago Medical and Business Schools. Professor Gall, kia ora.
Kia ora, Wallace. Nice to be here today.
Yes, good to have you on. We've just been talking about the budget breast screening and mammograms. What do you want to see coming out of the budget?
Well, I think there needs to be, as always, this is an ongoing question, more funding going into health. We don't spend enough on healthcare in this country. We don't spend it in the right way. And so I think, you know, Minister Robertson is right when he's talked about the need to be essentially supporting a reorientation of the healthcare system and how our very good professionals are supported to work in different ways. And that is working nationally across the entire country, you know, on behalf of the entire population.
Let's remind ourselves what these reforms were about. I mean, the changes were made to try to stop what is called the postcode lottery of care, where people do get different care or have different changes of survival depending on which DHB area they live in. This is coming quickly towards the start date, July the 1st. Are you confident that the level of care will be evened out, will be more equitable?
Not in the short term, but in the long term, there is some hope for that. I mean, the postcode lottery basically means that the 20 different DHBs have got 20 different clinical service delivery and management structures, meaning that, you know, where you live depends on access to care. So in some regions, you'll get potentially access to having your gallstones removed in the public sector. In other regions, absolutely no way at all. And so you have to go private in order to relieve yourself of considerable pain and probably your life living on morphine. I mean, it's an absolute national scandal, and the reforms are setting out to try and deal with some of these equity of access issues, but also equity of outcome issues between Māori and non-Māori New Zealanders, Pacific people, people on lower incomes. And these people really badly, badly miss out in our country, and that's because of the public private divide in terms of care. So people who can pay can, you know, go up or down the hill and get their hip or knee joint or cataracts dealt with. The reforms will not be able to solve that issue, unfortunately. So that's why long term you might get a bit more access to surgery around the country, for example, through some sharing, but not necessarily deal with that inequity between public and private.
Well, before I get to May and Simon, that sounds like that's an issue that needs to be covered.
Yeah, and I think, you know, what I would really like to see coming out of the budget, maybe not this year, but next year, is a bold government saying it's time to shift how we fund healthcare in this country. That's not being tackled at the moment, and we won't solve what I've just talked about until we have, say, a social insurance system in place, which you see through much of Europe and East Asia. It's basically like an ACC system it solves the equity problem. I don't think we can unlock the public-private practice that takes place in this country, but we could give access to treatment to all members of the public through having social insurance.
Okay, a social insurance system is the one thing that will make health equitable in Aotearoa, but that's not happening, or it's not on the table at least. May Chen.
Yes, I must say I'm feeling quite depressed because I've been around a long time in the government system. And don't get me wrong, it's wonderful for lawyers every time we get health reform, because when you rearrange the deck chairs, there's a lot of legal advice required. The only difficulty is that much is usually promised after every reform, and it's difficult to see it. A lot of money is spent doing the reforms, and we're right in the middle of another reform at the moment, while we're still in the middle of a global pandemic, and we've got all of these other backlogs which have taken a back seat on other health issues like breast screening, etc. So I have to say, Professor Gould, I get what you're saying about social insurance. Look, when I went to study at Harvard Law School, I was so lucky. I was a very poor girl and I didn't have any money, but I won a pile of scholarships and they paid. So on my first day riding on my bicycle to Harvard Law School, I got hit head on. Now, the ambulances all came rushing in, but the first question they asked me was not, "Hi, are you injured? Are you dying?" It was, "Do you have health insurance?"
Really?
And had my husband next to me said, "No, we hadn't," they would have driven away, and I know that. But all I'm saying is that we're currently in yet the middle of another health reform, and it's not dealing with this issue. So, look, Health New Zealand, Māori Health, you know, Authority, it's just, so all I can say is I think it's really complicated. And I'm not confident. Look, I'm sure everybody means the very best, but I'm just not confident that all these reforms will crack, that the current reforms will crack the issue.
Robin.
Yeah, look, social insurance is very different from private insurance, of course. So it means that everyone has equal access to funding to pay for the care that they need. It's a collective system. And if you go to Germany, they talk about solidarity as being one of the purposes behind their very long-standing social insurance scheme. It's not perfect, and it would need to be modelled to suit our purposes in this country. But, you know, the more I've thought a lot about it, and I think it's the only way we're going to unlock the resources that we have across the country in order to be able to provide equitable access to treatment.
Someone says here, I lived in Germany many years where healthcare is brilliant. Everyone pays a health insurance. Interesting. All right, Simon Pound.
Yeah, that's so interesting to hear. As moves to make other parts of the system operate more like ACC for patient care seem really promising to me. And the moves for the establishment of a Ministry of Disability in order to make that service provision more like ACC would be a really welcome change. Like, our experience in the disability space is that it's 6 months to wait for an appointment to understand what care and help is available, and then a further 6 months for being placed into any services, which, you know, for areas of acute need is, really remarkably slow. And our experience of ACC has been very different. So that kind of thing sounds quite promising. Another thing I'll be really interested to look out for is pay for frontline health professionals. I think over the last couple of years, it's been a source of real mystery to many people, especially to me, as to how these frontline workers were so important and are dealing with COVID every day. This isn't something that's away. It's most acute now for these frontline workers. Yet there's pay freezes, the borders are opening up, there's higher pay and easier conditions being locums and heading overseas to other places to work. Australia's calling. And it just, I really think it would be something that a large group of the public would really support, would be some kind of relief for pay freezes in frontline health staff.
Robin?
Yeah. Look, there's so many issues across the health sector, which makes it both, as May has said, depressing, but also fascinating. And pay is one of them. You know, our pay rates are lower than they are globally. It's difficult to attract people in certain areas, meaning that there are staff shortages. So, it's just another one of the issues that has to be dealt with at the moment.
Before you go, Robin, Andrew Little says technology will play a part in the new system, and I know that you're a lot about the IT health area, and it'll include improving access to things like virtual diagnostic tools. Are you hearing anything about what sort of tools there might be?
Not at the moment, and I don't know that any decisions have been made. But
right.
I mean, we have. I may have said this in the past. We've got a house of healthcare IT that's never had an architect, and so you can imagine what your house is like if you didn't have anyone design it. So we've got just multiple IT systems that don't necessarily talk with one another. It's really far from ideal. Having a national approach to this is really critical, but what needs to sit behind that also is the will to focus on the patient, which is what, if you look at Air New Zealand and airlines have done with their apps, they coordinate complex workforces and logistics through a will to focus on what's going to work the best for our customers. We've not had that will in our healthcare system, and that's what really needs to happen. It's challenging because you need to get the healthcare professionals to say, we're really focused on trying to provide seamless care, which can be coordinated through an app with the patient at the centre of it. That would be my hope.
Wow. All right. Professor Gould, kia ora. Thanks for your time there. A bit of a health discussion for the first half of the hour. That's extraordinary, May, that story you just said around about having a major injury. You're calling for an ambulance. The first thing you get asked is, do you have health insurance? And I'm just thinking about when I was looking up, having a bad accident in September of last year, looking up at two ambulance drivers and imagining what I would have thought if that was the first thing that they asked me. Do you have health insurance?
Yeah. Well, actually, we didn't call them. They were just cruising around waiting for accidents to happen. So as soon as I got knocked off my bike, they just swarmed in. But, you know, John said to me that, you know, they just kept asking, does she have health insurance? What's her number? And if I'd said no, they would have just driven off. They would have said, and he said, well, why is that relevant? Because he was trying to make sure I hadn't killed myself. And they said, well, because we can't treat her if she doesn't have health insurance. So, I mean, it's pretty stark for me, just having come from a little old New Zealand, that I was no longer in little old New Zealand. I mean, this was the United States, and it was cold and brutal.
Carmel says, I also lived in Germany and healthcare was amazing. For a small amount contribution each month into the public insurance scheme, there was unlimited doctor and specialist access with no waiting list. So there you just heard Professor Robin Gord saying that the one difference that would be good in health for equity issues is a social insurance scheme. We might follow that up next week on the panel. Prince Harry, in other news, acted in a promo video about sustainable travel. He released the news here in Aotearoa. Many wondered how that unites with his habit of private jet travel, which can emit as much as 2 tonnes of CO2 in just an hour, according to the group Transport and Environment. But there was the T-shirt he was wearing, emblazoned with the words "Girl Dad." Cringe de la cringe, said Vanity Fair's Tina Brown. Or is it absolutely fine, Harry telling others that it's just absolutely fine to have a daughter? Critics have said that advocacy means more than just wearing a T-shirt. And I thought I'd put this to the panel. Simon, you first.
Yeah, as a daughter,
is it something you'd wear?
Well, as a father of daughters, I don't think it should take being a father of daughters to be interested in women having equal rights, equal opportunity and ability in the world. So it kind of has always struck me when people say, well, as a father of daughters, I'm really concerned, because, you know, I don't know if it's terribly progressive to kind of like, once you kind of own a woman or something, to start caring about their rights and place in the world. But that said, anyone who's like advancing a conversation about equality of access and opportunity and being for it is on the side of kind of the good conversations, and they're far better conversations for men to be having than, as a father of daughters, I'm going to have a shotgun and, you know, making sure they don't get up to any malarkey with boys and all that kind of carry on. So I think anything that's moving in that direction and that's raising those conversations is a plus. And if you look at all the people who are really heavily against this, they're the kind of sad people with media things that they want to get some attention to, that jump in and kind of try and exploit this just to get some attention for themselves. So you're a bit of a storm in a teacup, I reckon.
Okay, so you wouldn't wear it yourself, but you're giving Harry a bit of a pass there. Good on you, Simon.
No, I wouldn't, but I'm not an advocate guy.
Right.
Okay, well, let me put a completely different lens on it. I was born in a patriarchal Chinese society where I was the youngest of 4 girls, and they were desperately trying to have a boy, and then I was born. This was very bad news. And I grew up with stories about how I was very fortunate that I was not given away, because, you know, 4 daughters is a huge misfortune in a Chinese family. And so actually various people took pity on my parents and did offer to swap me because they had 4 boys. Now, I was always told that I was very fortunate that I was not given away. So as opposed to a T-shirt that says, "Lucky I didn't give my daughter away," I think "Girl Dad" is just fine.
Extraordinary story there, May. You're on the panel. NZ National, we have May Chen and Simon Pound. A lot of response regarding mammograms, a lot of response regarding healthcare in Aotearoa, and also water tanks as well. Those of you who are who have a water tank in Auckland or elsewhere, because consent has now been it's free in Auckland, a lot of people are saying, actually, maybe it's a good thing to get one. You can text us 2101. You can email us, thepanel@rnz.co.nz. It's time for the headlines with Marama Te Pōle.